The Final Act of Juliet Willoughby by Ellery Lloyd, read by Aneka Okoye, Joshua Akehurst, and Eleanor Jackson, with additional voices provided by Matt Addis and Polly Edsel.
Author's note. With the exception of the fictional Juliet Willoughby, Oscar Ehrlich, and Austin Willoughby, all the artists mentioned or who appear in this novel are genuine historical figures. Prologue. Caroline, Dubai, the present day. It is time to begin. I am standing at a podium in front of a painting in an art gallery in Dubai. It is not a large painting, 30 inches by 21 inches to be precise. It is not a very large gallery. We are in the biggest of its three rooms, a white painted space about the size of a school classroom. Arranged in front of me are several rows of folding chairs occupied by reporters. I have already been introduced to a writer from the Telegraph and the Gulf News podcast team. A group of press photographers are clicking away, flash guns strobing. At the back are two TV crews, one from a local Arabic station, one from BBC News. Beside me at the podium is the owner of the gallery, the organiser of this press conference, Patrick Lambert. Dr. Caroline Cooper, Patrick is saying, is a fellow of Pembroke College and professor of modern art at the University of Cambridge, specialising in the surrealist movement in the 1930s, with a focus on surrealist art by women, in particular that of British painter Juliet Willoughby. Patrick lists my publications, highlighting my 1998 biography of Juliet, the first ever written, and still, he reminds everyone, the definitive account of the artist's life, work, and untimely death. He also mentions how long he and I have known each other. One or two audience members smile knowingly. The painting on the wall behind us is entitled Self-Portrait as Sphinx. It was painted by Juliet, then 21 years old, in the winter of 1937-38, and was first displayed at the era-defining International Surrealist Exhibition in Paris in 1938. For decades it was lost, believed destroyed. Last night it was sold, right here, for £42 million. Thank you, Patrick, I say, as he takes a seat in the front row. He gives me a wink. I stifle a smile back. I have been asked to keep my speech short, just 5 minutes in which to explain surrealism, its historical context, and underlying philosophy. To emphasise why this artwork matters, why I believe it to be genuine, and why I am prepared to stake my professional reputation on that opinion. To tell the story of the artist in this painting, and how it was lost, and how it was found again. Twice. It is a story that begins one wet autumn morning in Cambridge in 1991, at our first dissertation supervision with Alice Long, setting Patrick and me on a path that would eventually lead us to Juliet's lost masterpiece. It is a story that begins one winter evening in Paris in 1937, when a runaway British heiress embarked in the cold and cramped Montmartre studio she shared with her famous artist lover on one of the most remarkable paintings of its era. It is also, I suppose, the story of Patrick and me, how we fell in love. How a painting brought us together, drove us apart, and now seems to have united us once more. Of everything I have to say, I am aware that 30 seconds at most will make it onto TV, a sentence or two into the newspapers. The headlines will be all about the sum the painting sold for and who bought it. But perhaps what I really want to tell everyone in this room is, look at it. Look at her. I almost said, because it is her you notice first. The work's dominant central figure, her wild auburn mane, her ice-blue eyes, her expression, defiant, fearless. Then you notice her breasts are bare. Then you notice there are six of them, arranged like the teats on a cat. Then you notice she has a cat's legs too, a cat's haunches, tortoiseshell patterned, sharp claws, and you start to wonder what it might mean to depict yourself as a sphinx, as this sphinx. Only up close can you truly appreciate the painting's vast intricacy, the people and creatures.